On this week's show, Pat demands answers.
And we give him none.
We give him Lynn Cantwell.
She has all the answers.
Who gets Penguin of the Week?
Will it go to someone in St Kilda in Melbourne, or...
or the runner who runs a marathon in under an hour.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. It is Monday evening, the night after the day before. We are recording tonight because Pat had to be rushed to A&E this morning due to severe disappointment and frustration. He punched and kicked the wall in his house.
Could you not see the funny side of it, Pat? No. I have to go back. I'm going to have to go back for blood pressure here again.
Yeah, he took the kids out of school and everything. He's just there. I don't think he can go to school today. We're staying at home.
He took the kids out of school to take it out on them.
The bunny rabbits have been boiled. He's cooked all his rabbits at home. He's eating them for dinner. Look, there's so much that we have to get into about how bad it all was.
Let's put that on hold.
Let's put that on hold for a while. There were two or three really funny parts of that game that made me laugh as much as I... Yes?
My favourite part of the game was when Owen Farrell held on to CJ's foot like a little piece of damp toilet roll.
Coming out of the jacks.
Like, get off! Would you get off? And then Farrell threw a bit of a tantrum.
Yeah.
You can't just punch someone.
Yeah.
You just punch me.
Punch me in the head. Yeah. Yeah, that was... I don't know where he was going with that. I love CJ's quick thoughts. He's definitely done that before. Like, he was using that part of his hand and he was, like, punching them with an open hand.
Yeah.
It's like he's definitely done that into someone's throat. It's like a Steven Seagal move or something like that.
There's the Bruce Lee one-inch punch.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite vicious. My particular favourite part was when George Ford scored. You probably didn't see this because you were at the game, but he scored his try. And then he picked it up and he just lashed the ball as hard as he could straight into the crowd. And when I did it, I was like, Jesus, that could have hit someone. And then they showed the slow motion replay from behind him. And it was some English support, like an old man. It was like, yes. And it hit him straight into the face. Did you see that?
No, I heard about it. I heard people talking about it afterwards. Man, I missed it.
It was phenomenal.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Imagine like the turnaround and fortunes of that supporter. He's in like euphoria one second.
Swing low. Boof. It was so hard as well, like every cloud, you know, every cloud.
Yeah.
I told you, ripping the jersey off CJ was quite a comical moment.
That was enjoyable as well. Just him, like for no reason, just holding on to the two fellas and the boys can get away from them. And they're both getting so ratty.
And it's a pest. Yeah. It's nothing worse than that, than someone holding on to you.
Yeah.
Can't get
but
away.
He was just going, well, there's two of you and there's one of me.
Yeah.
So we're probably better off and stick with it.
Yeah. But you were there. What was it like? Was it a good crack?
Yeah, it was great. It was decent crack. The game got a little bit stale. Second half was boring.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was over at the...
It was quite chatty throughout, wasn't it?
It was very chatty, and there were English guys behind me were doing my head in. Some of the comments were ridiculous.
Go away.
I can't even...
Flannery wouldn't be digging the stereotypes.
No, they were very stereotypical.
Okay.
These guys were posh little pricks.
He'd be going after them.
Honestly, they were assholes.
Oh, they?
Oh. Yeah. They were. And as the game went on, they became more and more assholy. Yeah.
I'm just picturing your man from Braveheart, basically. Just that orange, the guy with the chainmail and the orange hood that licks his wife's face.
Yeah.
That's all I'm imagining.
Yeah, I was getting licked in the back of the head.
You remind me of my daughter back home.
Yeah. So it was nice though. It was it was a Guinness event with Abby Scott and Alex Cude. It was nice, and I bumped into Rory before the game. Actually, I was on my way to pick up my accreditation. It was quite crowded, a lot of people rummaging around. And then, have I ever told you about the nickname that Rory calls me? The Dopey Sheep. Have I told you this before? We talked about this, no?
No, but it's like...
So years ago, Rory and Leamy, you know, best mates, those two, which is an odd wee relationship. Mm. So funny how they're so close. They're like best friends. In Killiney Castle one day, I suppose they just think I'm like quite laid back or quite dopey or like not really paying attention sometimes, as it would have been more so then. I think I've kind of grown out of that a little bit since I've now got 3 children and quite mature.
Or you just hang around me and I'm also a dopey sheep.
Yeah, you're so, just dopier. I'm just less dopey, but relatively. But anyway, so they started calling me the dopey sheep for years, and it kind of caught on a wee bit. Now to the point where anytime Rory sees me, he just goes, bah. So I was just walking through the crowd and I just heard, you know how if you see someone, like you just quickly scan your kind of database, what do we have in common, what do we chat about, this is, and then, but Rory scans his database and he just goes, he sees me and he just goes, bah.
What's your one bag for him?
Nothing at all.
Ratty.
No, Rory calls the shots.
Oh, yeah.
So it was good to catch. Caught up with Rory and Alex Hewitt was brilliant, actually. Very dry, very funny. Quirky character.
I only know him from the the bum bag and the wearing the gear for 3 days after the match last year.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant.
Yeah. He was very good. There was one English, like quite outspoken guy at the back, and we put questions out to the floor, and then this guy goes, yeah, I've got a question. Quite confident, you know. Mm. And Google goes, oh, what is it? Relegation, salary cap. Go on, have a go. He wanted to get the straight
another stereotype
to the big issues. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was funny. Alex good, and he listens to the show.
Man,
he secret just right at the end. Spent about an hour together, and then right at the end, he's like, "Love the show, by the way."
Come on, hello, Alex Good.
And
Pat is delighted with that.
There are a few penguins in the room. One penguin came over, and usually they would come over and identify themselves. They'll say, "I'm a penguin." This guy just came over to me, and Fla was there, and he just goes, "Penguin,"
like a code word.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Yeah, I had a good few messages from the Penguins that I think we've got our Penguin of the Week trophy. I think we'll get to later on because I've got some contenders.
Uh-huh.
Have you got any?
No.
Yeah, okay, well, I have two.
I haven't kept to my New Year's resolution.
Fla, unfortunately, couldn't join us today. He's still in England. He went over for the weekend as well. But we have Lynn Cantwell, who's going to be joining us on the show in part two to tear into the weekend's rugby. And some examples of what... you Facebook people want us, Penguins want us to talk about. Why do we always struggle so much with a rush defence? We got caught out twice by kicks in behind the defensive line, yet we never tried to find the space in behind the English line. We just kept trying to get to the edges, which never worked. Anthony O'Loughlin. That's a fair point.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more, Anthony.
It was one of the things I pointed out in the Welsh match was how many times we kicked with variety in the first half. In the English team kicked 16 times in the first half on Sunday. 13 out of the 16 had positive outcomes. They had 9 different types of kicks, I counted.
Different kick categories?
Yes. And that's so hard to defend against.
Yeah.
And as you saw for the tries, it wasn't just the kick, but they were preempted. Like especially for Young's kick for was that Daly's try?
Ford's
try. There was 3 chasers who were like flat in the line the second Young kicks it at full belt.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just spot and space and Ireland not covering backfield. It was really good. Attack
it was manipulating.
Play.
It was bringing Larmour one side,
yeah,
keeping Jacob up one side, and then Johnny had to go back.
Yeah.
Of those 9 kick categories, was one of them whenever George Ford kicked toward his own line?
Yes. And also George Cruz's kick was included in that. So they were the 2 of the 3 that weren't very positive. But like two of Ford's, Gary Owens were incredible. Daly had 1 chip that Larmour caught and marked. Why he didn't mark the other one is beyond me. Mm. That preempted that first try as well just seemed like a really... I know he's playing with a little bit more attack-minded stuff, but that just... I didn't understand. I was like, have they changed the rules here or something? You can't mark that kick. I agree. And then Ireland on the other flip side of that had 13 kicks in the first half. Only 3 of them were positive, and the 3 of them were... kicks to touch from Murray, whereas the rest were all, and they were only like England had 5 different people who kicked the ball in the first half. Ireland only had 2, Murray and Sexton, and they were all just on the back foot.
I would say that wasn't Ireland didn't get joy from those kicks, not because the kicks weren't good, because the face play before that wasn't good, and they weren't kicking on their terms.
Yeah, a bit of both. Like, I just don't think you should be kicking if you if it's not on your terms, unless you're. Well, it should be always on your terms, really.
Yeah, but it's just because the guys were getting beat up and they weren't getting gain lines, and then.
Yeah, I suppose watching the Welsh match back this morning, seeing how much pressure they were under from the French, they could still find ways to recreate quick ball with a variety of different options off 9 and 10. So I don't know if that's a good enough excuse. But look.
The kicking's one thing. They're not. It's the getting the ball standing still and not getting gain lines.
Yeah.
And finding a solution to that English defence.
Yeah.
It felt like, defensively, England, it was men against boys. They were just manhandling. It's too much of an exaggeration. It was like firemen against teachers.
That's good. I like that. One of the other questions is, do we have management with the courage to make big decisions and drop star names in the face of ex-players who do nothing but defend their mates and make them untouchable to criticism? Colin McConaghy. Are you one of them, Derek?
I think that's us. It took me a while to work out.
Yeah.
That's us, yeah.
Look, I think...
What did he say last week?
Colin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet you if you'd asked for his opinion last week, he would have been, oh, we are flying.
Yeah.
Everything's back on course. The dawn of a new day after the World Cup.
Yeah.
New coach.
We thought we were in for a Grand Slam this week going into it.
So Colin gets carried away when things are brilliant. When things are good, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
And when we get beat, we need to drop Sex and drop Murray. That's what Colin says. We just put a little bit of context into every win or loss.
Okay.
We're calling your band.
More of this, Colin. Get under his skin because I'm useless at it. All right, we'll dive a little bit more into it. We'll also talk about France beating Wales, the Ireland under-20s winning in the Triple Crown, and the women's team losing, unfortunately, over in England as well. We'll also have all the other weekend action and catch up on our match point predictions. But let us get Lynn Cantwell on the couch.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Welcome back and welcome to the couch, Lynn. How are we doing?
Good, thanks.
The way you introduced that was like story time on CBeebies.
It's like Lynn's going to tell us a nice story.
I'm getting really good at blasting out those stories for them, reading a lot of Roald Dahl at night.
Yes,
not that they
have
a notion what's going on, but George's Marvelous Medicine is... unreal.
Yeah.
Lynn, you just had a baby.
I did.
How long ago?
5 weeks. Six weeks now, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you're up to your eyes in nursery rhymes and all that kind of crap.
Just feeding. Yeah.
Arlo.
Second.
So little Arlo, little boy.
Lovely.
Yeah, and he feeds an awful lot more.
Does he?
Yeah, boys.
Yeah.
I'm up a lot, but you just cope, don't you? You just keep on going.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll find his feet at some stage.
And how old is your first?
She's 2.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's a quick turnaround.
Yeah. It's nice, actually, because you have a little daughter, don't you?
Katie, yeah.
Katie, isn't it?
Katie, and
your twins.
Yeah.
Like, she's brilliant with him. Like, she doesn't take her distaste for our family growing out on him at all. She, like, touches his nose and kisses his head, but she hates us.
Right, okay. Yeah.
I know, she's just looking for attention, but it'll settle, and it's nice that they have a little kind of bond already, so yeah, we'll find her.
Molly beats the crap out of Katie, doesn't she?
Molly does. Molly's brilliant with Katie, though, but she's just over-enthusiastic.
Okay.
And she's quite physical.
Right.
I think Molly will have probably a lot more rugby in her than Jack.
Okay.
I can imagine her being just a little bit more confrontational.
Right, yeah.
And a little bit of a leg drive.
Yeah. It is bonkers, though, just that you can see their like personalities from the start.
Can you see that already? What's your little girl's name?
Scarlett. Yeah, she is just so bossy. Oh, my God. Like, this finger comes out. And then you reflect on yourself and you think, do I give out to you? Or does anybody in the world with a finger that assertively? And then I don't think so. But she's literally just pointing at everything, saying, do that. And you're just like, okay.
She's not licking it off the floor.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the rugby.
I tried Roald Dahl as well. I was going for coffee and I brought Katie and Jack out for coffee, and then I was going to meet Anna later on. And it was late, so we kind of were killing time. We went into Oxfam bookshop.
Yeah.
I was picking up all these books, these secondhand books, and I saw Roald Dahl.
I think we had a conversation recently about how...
He's brilliant.
Yeah, so good. Hey,
so Matilda, found Matilda. Hmm. And then I know that's Anna's, classic. One of Anna's favourite movies and favourite books. And I was like, Jack, this would be brilliant. I had to convince him. I had to get him on board. Yeah. I was like, Jack, I know best here. We're getting this book, okay?
Yeah.
And then I said, like, trust me, Jack, I think you'll really like this. Please bear with me. He's four. I should be the one to sign.
Yeah.
Took him to the coffee shop and I was like, I'm really enthusiastic, trying to read everything so enthusiastically. Got a page into it and he goes, let's leave that. What a brat.
Just leave it.
Leave that. Rolled ass on.
Well, Joe.E have just put a television screen in our green room over here with the Sega Mega Drive and Mortal Kombat in it, which is like the best thing ever. But I feel like I'm with Roald Dahl and with those computer games, I'm reliving a lot of my childhood and enforcing it on the babies. We had a Bose reunion at the weekend.
Oh,
Lynn and I
went
way back to our Bose days. We had an under 10s Bose reunion.
Oh, jeez.
And it was from our trip to Coleraine under 10s. And one of the lads said he stayed in your house,
actually.
And he said,
oh, no.
I said, what do you remember? He said, I played him in a game of like FIFA or something like that, and we kept beating him, and he was just getting really thick and ratty. and I was like, go away. And then this evening, we were walking in the door, and Trimby's like, I was playing a game of FIFA with some kid the other day, were you?
Yeah, it was Anna's cousin that was telling that story.
Yeah. And he kept beating him, you got so ratty with him.
Yeah, and I also get really ratty with Anna's brothers. They're both really, actually pro Evo it was, but anyway. Anna's brother used to beat me, and every time he scored a goal, he'd go, shh. So annoying.
So you haven't grown up in 30 years.
No, it really still gets under my skin. Guys like Colin and FIFA, those are the two things.
Yeah. So was it that bad, do you reckon? Were England class, or were we a bit off and a bit of both?
I think England were very good. Like, I think we always said going into it, this is not a bad English side. This is a very good English side playing badly for two games. It's only for two games. Like, what they did to Ireland last year in the Aviva, what they did to New Zealand, obviously, in October or September, was phenomenal. Like, that was an amazing English side. And, yes, they were down the Vinopola brothers, but this is a great English side. And I think they showed up for, and whatever were the dynamics behind why they showed up, whether it was Twickenham, whether it was Eddie Jones conversations, whether it was just they all gave themselves a kick in the ass, whatever it was, they showed up, and then Ireland didn't. And whether it was just for those first 10, 15 minutes, they were asleep at the start and then they were too far to claw it back, and they showed up a little bit more in the second half or not. I'm not too sure, I'm not too sure whether because they started poorly, they continued to play poorly. You'd expect them to be able to turn it around. Either way, Ireland didn't play well. And England played very well.
Yeah, I could see England's game plan like from the get-go, as I harped on about their kicking, but also their variety in attack and their defensive line speed was just like I told you, they'd come up, but then he'd just keep going.
Yeah.
Whereas like, correct me if I'm wrong, but if your defensive, philosophies, why doesn't everyone just use the rush defence and keep rushing? If you've numbers in the line, Ireland will make the first 3 or 4 yards, they'll get off the line, and then they'll put the brakes on and won't apply pressure out the back of a spot play or something like that. It's like, and then England are just keep getting off the line, keep putting you under pressure, keep putting Johnny Sexton under pressure and just compounding all our errors, and then we start going into them. So, first of all, that's England's attack play was bang on and their defensive play bang on, and very simple. What exactly do you think our game plan was, attack and defence?
I think we played too much. I think Johnny mentioned this in the press conference as well. I think we went out the back a couple of times, and it was a long pass. That's perfect for them, for their defence.
Mm.
Long pass, and then I told you the guys in the midfield too. Lange was manhandling Bundy, Henshaw at the back a couple of times. Yeah. Just felt like, as well, so we went out the back whenever it wasn't on, and then once or twice we could have gone whenever there was a lot of traffic.
So is that something like more options on the inside of Johnny or more inside passes? Because obviously you don't want to be kicking when you're on the back foot either. So
yeah, I just don't think... I think we went to 10 too often. I think we should have... Mm. And we didn't get enough joy off our carries, off 9. Because like, I know it's the most obvious thing in the world to say it,
but they're standing still when they get the ball.
Mm.
And there was no... Do you remember James Ryan when he used to carry? Mm. And he, to be fair, he was the best of the lot of the weekend. When he used to carry, he was so dynamic. He always used to get... I've heard it described as kind of beating the defender into the space, just keeping that pass short and making it flat as well. Whereas we were... The passes off nine were long and they were pulled back as well. Mm. So then that's perfect. Itoji's going, right, well, this is ideal. I can climb into this.
Yeah. That's it. Like, I don't know. There's just this... There seems to be a common theme. And, like, this is... excellent Irish side, excellent individuals, but I suppose when when you're playing badly or when people are starting to make mistakes, there's obviously that kind of snowball effect, and that was definitely evident in the first half and in the first 20 minutes or so. And yes, Sexton was a part of that, and he'll put his hand up to say that, but there didn't seem to be then the ability to take ownership for that turnaround, the momentum shift. And you know, we spoke before about relying on 9-10 and Murray and Sexton to make decisions, and if they have a bad game, how does that impact the rest of the team? Like, my opinion is, yes, you're not having decision makers 1 to 15, but, like, players need to have the ability to know that things are going bad. How do we shift this around? How do I take back control? Not to sound like a Brexit campaign, but, I think we didn't see that. So whether it was pressure at the start, or is it a little bit reminiscent of what we suggested was happening in the last couple of years, whereby players weren't making decisions for themselves, thinking for themselves, and say, you know what, this is not doing too well. I know this is what I can do to shift momentum back. There didn't seem to be that. So whether, I think there was a little bit of that as well in it.
Do you think we could have more deception in round nine? I feel like if as Murray's just about to pass the ball, if you took a picture and say, like, there's 30 different pictures, I think probably 28, 29 of them, you'd be able to say, bet you the ball goes to him.
And you'd
be right.
Yeah.
Because it's always that kind of like V or like that point.
Yeah.
It goes to him and you either latch or you get smashed back.
That's it, yeah.
There's no real options. And Murray was getting a hard time. He was getting a lot of traffic. I think it was tough on him as well because the guys weren't getting gain line. He was getting scragged.
Yeah.
Itoji was all over him. Farrell was over him.
Yeah. But even at one stage, you remember, I think it was the block down kick from Itoji, Murray to Itoji, and before he actually kicked it, he pointed to the ref and he said Itoji was offside. Mm. So he even pointed to the ref, told the ref that Itoji was offside. So Itoji still took a step back, but then still blocked it down, you know. So it was still prescriptive even after the ref was on our side, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a valid point.
Yeah. Yeah. When you say other people taking ownership, like as 2-13s, I think Raj and Shane Horgan were quite critical of people outside of the halfbacks yesterday taking that kind of ownership. I've mentioned this before, maybe Earlsey could do a really good job in 13. A little bit concerned about Henshaw, like, unbelievable player, but hasn't played a lot of rugby at 13 either. And I think watching Tompkins for Wales on Saturday, I know he hadn't a perfect game, but man, he took the...
He was really good, I thought.
Yeah, he made some mistakes, obviously the intercept and stuff, but he just took the game by the scruff of the neck at moments. And Fakatawa as well, obviously for France, is, you know, one of the best players in the world at the moment. Obviously we're missing Ringrose, who's an incredible 13, but yeah, I feel like that's maybe an element of our game we're missing with Henshaw and Aki in the centre at the moment. They're 2-12s in my eyes, so having a 13 that will know when to make that call, and
a 13 who'll step up and get the ball in his hands. Like, is that what you mean by Tompkins kind of just
and like some with electric pace and speed like Earlsey? Because I do think when he went in there after 45 minutes against Wales last or 2 weeks ago, he you know, you saw that pass that he threw to Larmour under pressure, and he created a lot of space for Conway on a couple of occasions as well. I think, you know, looking at the Italian game, he's going to make changes, right? I think he'll have to with kind of the pressure that's on. That will be one of them that I think I'd really like to see. And I said this a few weeks ago, and a lot of people got back to me saying, I think you're mad thinking that Earlsey is a 13. But what more do you want from a 13? He's the most experienced back outside of Sexton, probably. He's still probably one of the fastest. He's got the best skills. He'll sit down any defence. I'd want him in my team.
Like, what's he like to play with, Murph? Is he vocal at 13? Because I suppose what you're saying is you want somebody to be a decision maker as well as have, kind of the footwork and stuff to be able to do what a good 13 does. Yeah, on the outside.
He is. He really is. You know, I've played outside him a couple of times on the wing when he was 13. I've played 13 with him at 12. And he's a really clever footballer. Right. His chat is brilliant. Like, you know, as I said, his experience is second to none in that team. And I think in that's such a key position for us right now. He's got all the attributes.
So am I right in saying it's not necessarily a 13 that you're looking for. It's another distributor. It's another person to step up and be a decision maker and link. The reason why I'm thinking that is because there was one occasion where, England were coming around the corner getting loads of line speed, and Johnny just quickly tipped it on to Bundy. Bundy coughed it up and went forward, and then Johnny caught it. It was a penalty. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was one of the ones where I was like, that doesn't require two passes. Maybe Bundy should have just thought, right, well, what's the point in going through Johnny? Why don't I just carry off Murray and just, again, get the gain line earlier? And not allow them to get like kind of frustrate the defence by making the passes shorter and getting there quicker. That might have been an occasion where someone like Ozzie would have recognised that and spotted that.
Exactly.
I know Bundy had 12 on his back. That's what I'm saying. It just needed someone else. Maybe someone like Will Addison would do that as well, I think.
Yeah, going to create a little bit of space, a little bit more. I don't know.
Would Chris Farrell do that?
I think Chris, personally, I think he's more of a 12 in that role that I'm looking for. I think he's a brilliant distributor as well, so he can do a job at 13. But for what I think this Irish team needs, it's like there was one occasion in the second half where we had a penalty advantage in their 22, and Johnny had a crossfield kick to Pete. I think it was Pete. Remember that one?
Yes.
That kind of bounced into touch. It was unlucky. But if you look back, they showed the camera from behind the goals, and Earlsey came around and was out the back door of whoever was outside, Johnny Sexton, and I was like, if Earlsey gets that ball one-on-one with a defender with 5 yards either side of him in that 13 position, there's no one I'd hate to mark, you know, if I was the opposite 13. I'd be like, Jesus, don't give Earlsey a one-on-one there. Yeah. And that's never where I think we're not at our strongest there. We used to be with Draco on 13, and in fairness to Gary Ringrose, he can do that as well. So
I actually know what you mean. I can see the value in getting another ball player and someone who's going to step up and get the ball in their hands and make good decisions.
And make breaks.
But it's
making a break on an outside break. Yeah. Raj mentioned an RTE yesterday, or on version where, and it was funny because Tompkins was doing it off a right hand scrum. Bigger was just taking a flat pass and he was just whipping a skip one pass across Parks to Tompkins, and it's old school, and it's not something we see very often. But what more do you need when you're as a 13? Just give me the ball one-on-one with the ball out in front of me, and they've got the whole backfield to defend as well, so you can put a grubber through, or you can you can get too intricate with passes out the back and stuff these days, and forgetting that
just put, stretch them,
put the ball out in front of someone who can run a 30 metre in 3.8 seconds or something like that. Just give the ball to someone like Keith, you know.
I think there's something in that. I think Ireland might have been better if they had that kind of role or someone to take that ownership. But that only solves a small bit of problem. I think the big problem is the ball carriers and the gain line.
The bullying.
I think that's infinitely way bigger a problem.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. It did seem like, again, we're just like the game before the World Cup and the last year Six Nations, like we're just getting bullied, and the confidence they have, like a 55 minutes or something, English players are like, we've won this game. Where does that come from? Like it was and high five and then whoop whoop.
There's a lot of that, wasn't there?
Yeah. A lot of that.
Is that just annoying, posturing it? Or does that affect you as a player on the pitch?
I just still think that, like, I know we're compartmentalising it and this is a Six Nations and therefore it's important, but you know, there's a trend that's been here for a good while, and like if we don't talk about it and actually get it off our chest, you know, if we don't talk about it and address it, which is such a really important time to do it, first year post World Cup, then we could be sitting here again in 4 years' time and nothing has changed, you know. So like, if we compare it to the 20s performance on Fridays and the type of the style of rugby that the 20s are playing, and I know that they're footloose and fancy free, you know, 18, 19 year olds, but just that expressiveness, that creativity, that ability to take risks, that yes, was effective for them, and I understand that it's a different level. I completely get that, but damn, like, Ireland has the ability to play that style of rugby, but what's happening between 20s and our national side that we're losing that? So I'm not saying that we have to rip up the script in Ireland and reshape how we play rugby, but we need to be playing a better style of rugby,
yeah,
so that in 4 years' time we're going to be competitive, because we're not going to do it this way, you know?
But I thought we actually tried too much. We put long passes out the back and guys were getting man on ball.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's how you do it. Like, when Wales lose to France on Saturday, and generally if Wales lose in a Six Nations game, you don't really, even last week when they lost to Ireland, you don't see the same, drop in performance. They still play really well and play an exciting brand of rugby, yeah, but they mightn't get the win for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we lose, it seems to be pretty bad when we don't perform. It's either we're top four game,
yeah,
and we implement our game plan really well, or we drop off. There's no kind of middle ground of knowing, as you said, to just throw the ball around a little bit more. Or not even throw the ball around, but vary it up and have different options.
Just be a bit more maybe creative, but not necessarily be risky. Like what England did wasn't risky. They just manipulated the backfield, put a couple of dinks through, and they just thought it's pretty likely, again, the Irish guy in the backfield is going to get there first, but we still draw a couple of mistakes, and they did that.
So is it like, as you were saying a few minutes ago, where we're still, even though it's a new era, we're still a little bit predictable or prescriptive?
Yeah.
Is it, are we now, like, you know, you heard last week Bono came in and there was DJs at training. Yeah. Are we gone? Yeah. Is it now we're too relaxed?
Yeah. Yeah.
No more DJs.
Damn Bono.
Look, I don't know. And I just wonder, again, I wasn't coached under Joe, so I don't know. But, like, what you heard was like a regime whereby there was a lot of structure, and I suppose in the presence of a lot of structure you kind of don't think for yourself, isn't it? That seems to be the
like North Korea.
There's a lot of political references in this, isn't there? So is there that the players have started to just not make decisions and look and scan and read the game and continue to develop their rugby intelligence, which is what separates sides, and we're seeing the effects of that. So we just rely on the Murray and Sexton, and then when they have a bad game, everybody has a bad game, whereas that's not necessary, you know, because all of those players have the ability to make decisions and to change games around and blah, blah, blah. So are we seeing just a little bit of a latent effect from...
It'll take a while to come out of that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty biased in this, because I loved playing under Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've never
played so well.
I've never played in an Irish team under Joe that didn't perform well.
Yeah,
so I'm totally skewed in my understanding. Mm-hmm. I can only ever see the value in being prepared, being ready, being, you know, kind of thorough in your preparation.
Yeah.
I love all that stuff. But there's something that didn't work at the World Cup or even in the run up to the World Cup, really, in the 6 months before. Mm. So I don't know what it was, but I know, like Conway mentioned there last week, you know, there's just a slight change. You know, obviously you're talking about the DJs during training and the forwards are doing drop goal competitions after training, you know, and that's the sort of stuff. I don't think Joe would have kind of had that.
Yeah.
So maybe the guys are being allowed to be more human and more normal and just have a bit of crack and a bit more relaxed with it. I don't know if that will mean there'll be better decision makers on the pitch, but maybe there could be a bit different vibe. I would imagine that atmosphere would lend itself to being more together and have more of a cultural kind of bond, more of a team bond, which we didn't see on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think we saw. We saw actually England plant the seed of doubt early on, beat us up, and then we started to go into ourselves. Yeah. We didn't really have the unity that we would.
Johnny Sexton said in his post-match interview that it felt like he was reliving in the same game. He was in the same game as he was in the Aviva last year, which I suppose it's going to take a while to break out of. You know, that what we've been doing for the last 10 years under Joe, and to
imagine they had Billy Vanapola at the weekend.
Didn't Eddie Jones, like, is he just laughing now? Like, he's been torn to shreds over his selection.
Yeah. He said that. He said something like to the press, he was like slagging the press, oh, we just have to come in here and suck up to you guys, you're the experts.
Yeah.
He says, we're going to play six locks in the 23 next week.
Yeah. So any changes you reckon for the you'd like to see for the Italy game?
Cooney, like to see Cooney.
Mm-hmm. No, and again, I don't buy into the fact that Murray had a shocker. I don't buy into the fact that Murray's not quite what he was. But I think he was hung out to dry with the forwards, let him down, and even maybe the coaching let him down, because I don't think there was enough deception or shape off those plays. But just because Cooney's played really well.
Like another thing Farrell said was he blamed, this is on me or something. He was saying a lot of in his post match stuff that this is a. I got to take that in. It was me that didn't have them prepared, or I didn't have them ready, which is them just deflecting maybe a little bit. I didn't really understand what he meant there.
I think if you can put something down to a systematic kind of reason why they didn't play well, like as in something that affected everyone, no one looked like their body language was kind of dynamic and physical and aggressive and confrontational compared to them. Whenever they got a turnover and you know they brought their atmosphere and buzz, I think he would maybe take responsibility for that.
My thoughts on it were that in the Aviva last year when they came and had that rip-roaring start, energy, we actually tried to meet that with the same energy and started playing a lot of ball and up the tempo as well. So I was thinking maybe, you know, all the talk this week was we've got to quash that English energy at the start because they're going to come out of the place like the traps. So were we trying to slow the game down and maybe take a little bit more time, but by doing that we lose energy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. But definitely it was. I know. It's just hard to. It's hard to put it down. It's hard to put it down. Anything. And then how do we react? There's no. I doubt there's anything in the game plan. If things start going badly in the first 10 minutes, then we go to this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that will be covered.
Yeah, look, I think Cooney as well. And again, I'm a big Murray fan, but it's more just, look, you know, give him a chance because he's very good. And I think what Ireland lacked is just that energy, as we were saying, and he's got it in abundance. So I think that would be great. What it also might do is it might just, not that Conor is being complacent, and as a result, he's choosing to play within himself. And by being dropped, he's going to get a kick, and he'll perform better the next time. But I think it naturally does. It naturally does. Like it's what happened to Peter Mahoney when he was dropped in the first game. He came on then, and he was just playing a stormer and moving back and forth. So I think it could be beneficial for both Murray and Cooney.
Someone like Keelan Doris.
Yeah, look, I think he's the story that everybody's talking about at the moment. So more of that. Just more, it's bigger picture. It's the first year post-World Cup. It's the time where you want to just take chances. And I know it's on Andy's head, and he's in a tenure where he wants to make a good impression and stuff. And it's risky to blood players because you're inevitably going to, you know, take more risks and maybe lose some games. But I think maybe for the return later on, I think it would be a good thing to shake things up now.
Kilcoyne maybe as well. I thought he went really well when he came on. Brought a bit of energy.
Yeah, it looks like Healy did it. Was there a report in Healy?
Just Farrell said at the end, it was his hip. He injured his hip, and they'll take a bit of a look at it. But no injury updates now or anything today. So
Porter as well. Porter went well when he came on, didn't he?
Yeah, he was good.
Serious player, man.
And then maybe I don't know. Did you want to change your whole like Kelleher as well? Maybe like.
Harry had a good game as well. Did he?
Dev went well actually for coming in late, didn't he? Yeah, he would have just found out like. Friday or Saturday, wasn't it?
Dev's never going to be someone that brings you that big kind of grunt, is he? Like, you're like, he's never going to, that's not his game, really. Like, but
is Henderson, is he back this weekend? Or is he?
Yeah,
just
had,
back,
hey? Had a wee boy called Fred.
Okay.
On Friday, I think.
Ah, congrats.
Nice. Or Freddie, maybe. I don't know. Or Frederick, I don't
know. I was watching the game actually earlier, and I was looking at when Keane Healy got injured, and I heard afterwards, yes, it was his hip. But I was just thinking, like, how big a hit would it have to be to hurt his hip? Yeah. You know, he's the biggest man in the world.
I know, his hips are bulletproof, you would have thought.
He's so flexible as well. You ever see him stretching before games? Like, he can pretty much do the splits.
No way,
honestly. Yeah, so I don't know, he looked like he was down poached and maybe could have stretched it too much. But yeah, you're right. Cool, and the French game, I don't know, I totally enjoyed that anyway. We were in the pub at our reunion, buzzing. There was just some brilliant moments. some brilliant tries. That one, who scored, was it Figo scored in the corner? It was disallowed.
Yeah.
What a try. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I thought Gaultier looked like he's wearing Ian McKinley's glasses.
I love it. Yeah. He looks mental. Yeah.
Doesn't he? He does look a bit mad.
Yeah. I'd say he is, like, he's...
Yeah.
He's...
I can't imagine him and Sean Edwards having much in common.
Yeah.
They're very, very different types of people, aren't they?
Yeah. What, he's doing some job, man.
Yeah.
Sean Edwards, like that defence they had at the end of the first half, 5 minutes into injury town, time, down to 14 men.
It's injury time.
Yeah, that was incredible and something you don't see from France, especially not away from home.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of resilience, but there just seems to be a change there, right?
Yeah. Well, that's it. Like, I just in particular for the Intermac interception was phenomenal from a confidence point of view. So defensive system, yes, tick, tick, tick. Like we have to say that the defensive change has to be down to Edwards because it's having such a big impact.
Yeah.
But then the intercept was phenomenal. Like serious confidence. Like that boy, he had no right to go for that intercept. No right at all because he had two players outside him. And oh my good God. Unbelievable confidence to do it. Yeah. So, yeah, just
he's
such
buzzing
flair.
At the minute, isn't he?
I was listening to another podcast and someone pointed out that, like, when he scored that try, he was just like, just dinked it down and was like,
What?
I think he smoked a cigarette after it. Straight away.
Some of those little plastic holders. and a big moment at the end when who was it that knocked on?
Willem. How do you say that name?
Oh, Willems,
Yeah,
knocked the ball. Who was Ken Owens making the pass? Was it?
Ken Owens was about to pass. Yeah, Josh Adams was out on the wing.
Could have been a yellow card. Was it? Was he give a scrum in the end?
That was even knock on. But
that
that's
was definite.
Paul O'Connell was just like saying he knows what he's doing.
I'm with Paulie. Yeah, he definitely knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he'd like palm up, open, swing. Oh, sorry, I was trying to make the tackle.
It's not a penalty try. Because I think it was Josh Adams coming round. I don't think it's definitely going to score. I think there's a good chance. It was Josh Adams was going to score. But whoever it was coming around the corner. I don't think it was a penalty try, but a yellow card definitely.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
You agreed?
Sure.
Were you listening?
I just think with the size of his hands, actually. It says something good.
Italy Scotland match was there was nothing going on really in that apart from a pretty brilliant try from Stuart Hogg.
For me, it was a weekend of tantrums, and it was a bad weekend for player referee relationships. I thought Johnny was cracking up with Piper, even Owen Farrell was cracking up. Dan Bigger was cracking up with Matthew Carley. And then I was listening to a bit of the Scotland Italy game on the radio. I think it was Al Kellogg on Five Live, Five Live Extra or whatever. He threw a bit of a tantrum himself, and he said there must have been a scrum where I think Scotland were going backwards, and he obviously didn't agree. It was Ben O'Keefe, isn't that his name? Ben O'Keefe.
Yeah.
He said that's a pathetic discussion.
discussion.
He cracked up and he goes, "That's absolutely pathetic from Ben O'Keefe," which is strong.
Yeah.
And then he goes, Ben O'Keefe, you know nothing about scrummaging. And then he goes, it was a nothing scrum. Why would Scotland bring it down? And then he finishes with, is it any wonder we hate them? Refs.
Refs.
Oh, yeah. My God.
I think it was Al Kellogg. I don't know. But I think he does a bit with Five Live and it sounded like him. So it could be someone else completely. I'm totally accusing him out of the blue, but... It's not quite strong.
Yeah,
you don't hear commentators talking like that.
Yeah.
It makes sense, though, I suppose.
Yeah. You get very frustrated when, especially at scrum time, because I think there could be just such random decisions half the time.
There's a couple in the Ireland game as well.
Yeah. Like he gave one penalty, like just as the ball went. I don't even know if the ball had gone in. Just as they bound, and he gave a penalty straight away. Piper gave a penalty against Aki in the second half on about 58 minutes for when he clearly gave a little release and then locked in on the ball.
Yes.
And he gave a penalty. He gave a penalty against Ross Byrne towards the end for not rolling away where he's actually tackled down on top of the or rucked over down on top of the ball.
Johnny picked up on that actually with his conversation afterwards. He says, what was the issue with our 12 here? Hmm. And at the time, Piper said, no release. But then when Johnny said, what was the issue here? Then Piper said, oh, he led with his hands, or his hands were on the ground first. And Johnny said, he was like calling his bluff. Mm. He said, okay, yeah. But you'd said no, or didn't release.
Yeah.
So it was a different reason why you give the penalty. See, yeah. I think Johnny's very switched on with stuff like that. He never misses stuff like that. Yeah. That's why I know people sometimes are critical of him being too talkative to the ref. But he misses nothing.
No, yeah. No,
he's so switched on.
Yeah, yeah.
No one else picks up stuff like that like he does, I don't think.
Yeah, no, he's very astute. I think it's just his delivery. And I think he's working on that. Definitely when you become captain, it's vital, isn't it, that you have to be able to kind of emotionally manage your delivery as such. But you're right,
Farrell was very conscious of that. He was like, I'm trying to work with you. I'm trying to work with you, you know, lad.
As he held onto Sanders' leg.
Yeah.
Right around the field. The women's game, it's similar, I suppose, to the men's game, that shocking first half, but, you know, conceded one try in the second half and kind of put it up to them a little bit more. Pretty positive, I suppose, second half from that point of view.
Yeah, like it was those eerie parallels with the men's game in that, look, England were favourites going in, it's that same old story. Ireland have been shown signs that they're maturing in this campaign, which is great. They have a good bunch of players and a good bunch of talent, and they have improved a lot since last year and put in a great performance against Wales and beat Wales, but then just literally, it just seemed really spooked, like really, really spooked.
Yeah.
And they are a young enough side as well, so I get that. And England are scary, like really they are.
Yeah.
And I think if you can't get the right mindset going into playing England women, whereby you really just focus on yourselves and really hype yourselves up to play your game, if you look at them at all, you're absolutely screwed. And I think there just seemed to be that element where the girls were really spooked. They were doing the same as what the men were doing. They were taking passes just static. It was all fairly aimless. Ones and twos. There was no fight on the ground. You know that game where you get the ball and you're so scared of the opposition, you're just like, I'm going to go to ground because I just need to get there, you know. And where they were just trying to go to ground, there was no fight on the ground, then the rooks end up being messy and England would just turn it over. So there was just no possession, Ireland no possession. So England scored a few tries and then they seemed to have a word with themselves in the second half, came back and put in some big hits, just focus on the defence, which, yes, I know it doesn't win games, but they need to sort out their attack to score against England to be able to be competitive. But what it showed is that when they show up defensively, they can put pressure on England and they stop them scoring a few tries, and they got them to 27-0 in the end, which objectively is better than last year. And they never would have been looking to beat England this year, even though they would have loved to, obviously. But their goal was to win the three home games. And the most important one for Ireland will be next weekend when they play, or what is it, two weekends, when they play Italy, because Ireland's kind of goal this year is they have a reportage in September because they still haven't qualified for the World Cup. So if they play Spain, Scotland, Italy and Ireland in that reportage, just the four, and the winner goes to the World Cup. So they've already beat Scotland. They know that they can do that. They hopefully can beat Spain, who are not in the Six Nations, and Italy will be the grudge match. So if they beat Italy in the Six Nations, that would look good for them in the reportage, and that's kind of their goal for this year.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, the two of you have a bit in common, actually.
Oh.
You're both former 13s, both Grand Slam champions. And
I didn't win a Grand Slam.
Did you not?
No, just the championship.
Oh, shit. They both win a champ. I was going to
sorry.
Won championships. You've both been on stage with Hermitage Green.
Yes.
Ah,
yes.
What was your... Were you on the muted bongos? That's what I was on.
turn him off.
Oh, no. Like, I would have gone to Hermitage Green as much as I could earlier on. And when we won the Grand Slam, the lads were playing in London and I went along and I brought my medal because I, like, slept with it for probably 8 months afterwards. And it's not a gold medal. It's actually gold plated. So it kind of wore away after.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I need to take this from underneath my pillow.
I was biting it.
Yeah.
But,
and I always remember your face being so happy. Like, you know, some people who understand what it's like to have achieved what you've achieved in rugby or whatever it is. And I remember your face. You were just so happy for us. And
of course.
He's lovely, isn't he?
So what did you play?
Half a bottle of whiskey and I'd say,
what did you play on stage?
Oh, no, I didn't. I just came on stage.
Oh, right.
With her medal. And then I took her medal and I put it on.
Yeah.
And I wore it for the rest of the gig.
So you had to stay to the end then.
Because he didn't. He played his song and then just walked out the door.
He did that cheap stunt where they come down and sing the song in the crowd, you know. Yeah. It's like emotionally manipulating everybody.
Don't tell them our secret. So obviously you have some incredible memories from that year. We talked to Fiona last week about Fiona Coughlin about what ye had gone through with those years of Bowes, winning 12 championships, was it? All-Ireland championships. And then your first cap for Ireland against England was 70-something nil,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, 79-0, yeah.
And then to beat them in 2013.
Yeah.
And then to go on to beat the All Black or the Black Ferns in the World Cup. Like, what memories to have.
Yeah, look, it's so cool. And you know what? It's funny because with Irish rugby, because we're trying to get it to the stage, and I say we, like, you know, have no part to play in that at all, really, but you want to see it doing well. You tend not to be able to talk about the times where we've done well because you don't want to create like a comparison, and I think that's healthy because you want to just focus on the girls. But if you're allowed time to talk about the 2013 and 2014, it was so lovely because I lost every game. We lost every game for 6 years before we actually won a game, you know. So we were playing for 13 years, and the couple of girls that were there for it all were like Fi Coughlin and Joy Neville and that kind of crew. But there's plenty more before that, Sarah Jane Belton and Paddy Kelly and all of the great players that played with Bowes. And that was in the team that myself and Murph played with. So we played for 6 years, won nothing. First cap, 79-0 in Worcester against England. You know, you're just like, oh God. And then just started winning games, just won one game and then won the next game like each year and eventually won a couple of three, and then four. And you're just like, oh God, like I see this trend here, you know? Yeah. And then we ended up winning in 2013 and winning the Grand Slam. And it was just a lovely combination of, I think, some old hats who probably, like, reflecting on what we're talking about with Ireland, you become battened down by losing and trying to play a risk-free game. So I think by the end of it, we were probably very mature heads and knew good rugby and knew how to manipulate a game, etc., but didn't take a lot of chances. Whereas we just had this influx of two or three or four really good, young, vibrant players. Ashley Baxter from Ulster. And they made the difference. And just that combination was lovely. And one important thing, I think we had a coach who really just liked to empower the players. So we actually had a lot of ownership on the pitch as to what happened. And we could come off the pitch and say, look, I wasn't happy with that. Can we try and do this? And not that we'd change the game plan because of it, but we had a really good collaboration with our coach and the players. So it was a nice vibe.
I remember how receptive you were to coaching, and how that's what used to blow my mind, because we kind of grew up in the club at under 20s and senior kind of the same time. And I remember working with you in particular as a 13 in Costello would take us down and do some work. And you, your ability to take in stuff in comparison to most lads that I would have worked with, and that's across the board for probably most of the women that in that Bowls team and in that national team that I would have known quite well, was quite striking to me, like that the difference between men and women, and that the girls were taking it in a lot more and just so much more encouraging. And the bond he had, it wasn't as competitive within a team, if you know what I mean.
Right.
It was really encouraging, and you were all so keen to learn.
Yeah.
That's what's always struck me. And you know, I look at that team now, and the Welsh match, I think I was really impressed by the girls, that like no matter who was coming off the bench or who they're bringing on, they just seemed to be all on the same page. Seem to have a similar kind of bond.
That's a really valid point, because I think this is the first time in this team where I've seen that kind of alignment of the girls and what they're trying to achieve. And on the pitch, you know that, don't you? When when something happens, and if you have to kind of shift the direction of what you're doing on the pitch when everybody does it, as opposed to two or three players run that way and everybody else runs that way. Whereas in the past we would have seen that, whereas I think with this Irish team you're seeing that a little bit more. But just to talk about Bowes a little bit more, and that's lovely for you to say, but I think the environment that we had in Bowes was just so cool, in that we have a great club that supported just players getting better, the underage structure and all of the different layers and all of the different teams. And then you had really great coaches that wanted the players to get better. And I suppose that we had like the women's team, and we always had a connection, the men's team, one or two of the players from the men's team would coach the women's team, so you always had that link. We had you guys to look up to because we had lots of Munster representative and Ireland's representative too, and in the academy. And you just had that lovely kind of family community vibe, something I'd never forget, like really, 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 really special.
Yeah, brilliant. We had at the reunion the weekend, my dad couldn't make it, but he sent a video and he said, I was ref in the under-10s before and you were playing against Richmond down in Richmond's pitch, and back then the girls and the boys would play together and the under-10s, and Shane O'Keefe was in the front row and he was going down for a scrum, and he came up out of the scrum and he said, Mick, my dad was ref, he said, one of the girls is after grabbed me by the balls. My dad goes, play on, Shane.
Enjoy it.
Like Shane. So I completely forgot about that. We used to play against each other. Look, that's great. I think we should get to our Penguin of the Week because we've left them hanging.
This is a good way to keep them listening.
They're all just there. So, Lynn, this is our Penguin. Trimby made this with his children who got quite bored, I think, and he just ended up doing it.
They were doing a jigsaw while I was making that.
Is that a toilet roll?
Uh-huh.
Is it a toilet roll?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah.
How would you make a penguin trophy?
Just the same. Sure. I was asking so that I could replicate it.
So Hermitage Green are touring Australia in a couple of weeks. We're going to Melbourne to play in St Kilda at a festival. And one of our penguins got on to me saying that she lives in St Kilda, and there is a group of penguins, actual animal penguins, that live just on the beach in St Kilda. And she likes to go down there with other Baz and Andrew penguins and listen to the show while spending time with the actual penguins as the sun goes down in St Kilda in Melbourne. Isn't that amazing?
It's more weird than amazing.
Well, I'm going to go down there after our gig in a few weeks. So that is one of them. But I'm not going to give it to her because I can't remember what her name is.
Not weird enough.
That's how fickle this trophy is.
Yeah, and it's too far to send it to Melbourne. But there was a guy called Brian Redmond who did a marathon last week, and he listened to our live show while he was doing his marathon, and it made him, it inspired him.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
He just listened to it once?
I don't know. How long is a marathon? An hour?
What's this like? He must have been flying.
In your Nike shoes.
Really, really inspired him. Okay, that's enough of that. So that's the Brian Redmond. Congratulations, you are our Penguin of the Week. And we'll be right back after this with our Guinness Pint Predictor.
I remember once driving home from a game with Paulie from Cork, and he was driving and I was sitting next to him and we were just chatting away, and we looked ahead and there was a rabbit hopping across the road in front of us, and I think we both thought at the same time that if he just keeps on moving that we'll just go past him. So we're driving and the rabbit just stopped and looked straight into the headlights, and Paulie just fucking smacked straight into the rabbit, and you could just hear this dink of the off the bonnet of the car, and he was like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I was couldn't stop laughing at what had happened. But he described what had potentially happened, like he was probably in the bushes with his family and he was like, I'm going to go out and get you some food, and they're like, thanks dad, and he's like, hey. Hopped out, and then Paul O'Connell just mows him down in his car. So I thought that
before he goes, they're like, watch out for psychos, yeah.
All right, welcome back, and let's take a look at the Guinness Pint Predictor leaderboard. The predictor is simple to get involved in. You predict the winner and the margin of the Guinness Six Nations every week. And if you're within 3 points, you win a pint of Guinness. And a big shout out to Ed, who donated me a pint of Guinness, which you can also do. There's been like 50,000.
Yeah, yeah.
That's lovely of Ed. That's very near Penguin of the Week territory, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Sorry, Ed.
Sorry, Ed.
Sorry, Ed.
Anyway, we're playing all the way through the championship, so please get involved by downloading the Matchpoint app using the league code HORIE, Japanese hooker. There are some really good prizes up for grabs.
But the winner of this week's prize, which was 2 tickets to the Italy game, is Joe Fanukin with 71 points and 2 perfect scoreline predictions, which is insane. You finished top of the House of Rugby League for round one, so congratulations, Joe. 2 tickets for Ireland versus Italy in the Aviva Stadium, and 2 tickets for Ireland versus Italy women's game at Energia Park the day after. So you won.
Yeah, so Pat has outlined a little bit of a loose script here, and he's highlighted classy reaction from Trimby. Do you know me at all? Evan, I'm going to be smug. But it's for nothing, really. Yeah, because Flav's not here to do his forfeit. Yeah,
you got 18 points, did you?
No.
No, you got way more.
More than that, yeah.
Flav got 0, but he's not here today, so...
Pat got 0 too.
Yeah, we don't really have to linger on that for too long at all. But
you thought Italy would beat Scotland. Yeah. Brave, brave.
On TV as well on Friday night, and I made all the exact same predictions. Jeez. Horribly wrong. Mm.
I forgot to do my predictions for the Italy match, so I totally let myself down. But there's no rugby on this weekend, obviously, so rugby fans, you can test yourself on the Guinness Time Quiz on the Matchpoint app on Thursday. If you answer 10 questions correctly, you win a Guinness at 5 p.m. that same day.
Party on.
Party on. We're not there yet. cheers to everybody for listening today, and for those of you watching on YouTube, thank you so much to Lynn for coming on. Absolute pleasure, and best of luck with little Arlo. We hope you get him sleeping through the night.
Yeah,
ASAP. Thank you to everyone involved in the show this week, to Pat, to Dermot, to Ian, and to Anthony. Thanks for your help this week's show. And this has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.